Welcome to The Inner Circle, the podcast where the Radius Group, a team of experienced wealth advisors, brings you inside the circle of smart financial planning. With a network of industry experts, the Radius Group discusses the latest trends while sharing timeless wealth management techniques. So whether you're looking to optimize your portfolio, minimize taxes, or plan for your future, The Inner Circle is here to provide exclusive and valuable insights. Our guest today is Dr. Chris Pearson, founder and CEO of Black Cloak. Chris is not affiliated with UBS Financial Services, and his views are his own.
Welcome to another episode of The Inner Circle, your trusted source for valuable insights on your wealth management journey. I'm your host, Colin Faulkner, Senior Wealth Strategy Associate with the Radius Group. In today's episode, we're going to explore key aspects of cybersecurity that are not only pertinent to your personal safety, but also integral to holistic wealth management. Because in today's interconnected world, safeguarding your digital assets is undeniably a crucial component of securing your overall financial well-being. I know this is something that I think about on a pretty regular basis, and maybe it's not explicit, but it definitely lingers in the back of my mind. So joining us over Zoom is Dr. Chris Pearson, founder and CEO of Black Cloak, a trailblazer in personal digital protection for corporate executives, high-profile individuals, and their families. Chris has over 25 years of experience in cybersecurity, privacy protection, and fighting cybercrime, with notable roles at the Department of Homeland Security and as the Chief Privacy Officer for Royal Bank of Scotland. Chris, welcome to the Inner Circle.
Hey, it's great to be here, Colin. Appreciate your time and love chatting about this topic.
Yeah, good. We are very happy to have you here and honored. As we delve into today's discussion, Chris, let's talk about Black Cloak. Could you share more about the mission of Black Cloak and the crucial role it plays in safeguarding the personal lives of its members?
Absolutely. So at its heart, Black Cloak's mission is really, we protect digital lives. There's a little dot, dot, dot after that in terms of like what we do and who we do it for. And that's going to be persons that are highly exposed, highly targeted, highly profiled individuals. That could be corporate executives in their personal lives and their families, and also can be high net worth, ultra high net worth executive or high net worth, ultra high net worth individuals, as well as those people that are just higher profile, you know, sports star, rock star, politician, whatever it might be. Those individuals are people that are targeted by cyber criminals, sometimes targeted by nation states, especially on the executive side. And when you really think about it, in terms of their external defenses, they're the weakest in their personal life. They're the weakest with their husband or wife or spouse or kids, significant other. They're the weakest in that zone where they don't have corporate controls, they don't have corporate protection. And as a result, Black Cloak stands there ready to protect them, defend them, to stop and repel those attacks, to really shrink the attack surface from a privacy perspective. And more importantly, just to be there as a concierge. Anything privacy and cybersecurity related, we'll take care of with them and help them on their digital journey.
Perfect. Well, it definitely sounds like we have the right person that we're talking to. So I'm eager to hear all your insights and your breadth of knowledge. So let's dive right into our first topic, protecting all your accounts. Can you tell us how we might be able to do that?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing to do is really think about it is make sure that all of your online accounts are being protected. And I say the word all, we're gonna boil it down to really four key accounts: email accounts, financial accounts, healthcare accounts, and social media accounts. That's probably going to account for about 12 maybe websites, 12 different logins. We want you to focus on those items. It doesn't mean that we don't think that a Nike.com or UnderArmour.com account is not important, but what it does mean is we want you to focus where the harms are the greatest, where the win and the financial win for the cyber criminals is the greatest, and therefore where you're most likely to be targeted. And I got to tell you, the number one is going to be email because it controls everything. It controls everything. And every single one of the key accounts I just said, financial, healthcare, and social media, has that nexus of control back into the email. So when you think about your online accounts, you know, we'll just say Gmail, for example, in terms of email, What we want you to do for those 12 websites, we're not asking you to boil the ocean. Just for those 12 websites, we want you to make sure that dual factor authentication is turned on. It's called dual factor authentication, multi-factor authentication as well. We sometimes people call it 2FA, all the same thing. Want you to make sure that is turned on. There are several different types. All we want you to do is something that's in the positive direction. It is no longer sufficient to have a username and password only. So take a step to turn that on and to actually do something in that area. Some people will argue about what's most secure, all the rest. There's things that are certainly more secure, but at the very least, we want you to turn it on and use a text-based SMS code that gets texted to you, right? The code is 12345. Every single time you log in, you'll put in your username, password, and it will text the code to you. You then put that code into the website and or app, and it will let you in. That is a form of dual-factor authentication. It's a little bit weaker, but it will get you up from that 5% cybersecure up to about 80% cybersecure. And that's better than the 5% or nothing at all. Really, if you could, you know, in a perfect world, if you click your heels and you say, hey, what's the most effective thing to you? It'd be a, you know, device authenticator. So it would literally be an app that's on your phone. It could be a Google Authenticator, Microsoft Authenticator, Authy, all free. And we have no relationship to those whatsoever financially, all free. And it allows you to have a code that's key to that website. And every 30 seconds it refreshes. It refreshes and you type in a new number. That's going to be more secure than SMS. That'll get you up to the 95 to 99% mark. And of course, there are physical keys that you can have that you plug into your computer or hold by your phone that also can authenticate you. That will really get you into the total 99% mark. But no matter what, I think the key message is this. You cannot just use a username and password with regard to those key sites, those 12 key sites, email, financial, healthcare, and social media. You have to have dual factor authentication turned on. And of course, unique passwords for those websites, unique passwords, 12 passwords you have to know or remember, put into an encrypted password vault. That's really the first step. Protect those accounts. You don't protect those accounts and everything else is tied to them. Your pictures, your videos, your email, your calendar, your contact information, all that's tied to it.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. Thanks. I'm learning with all of you probably right now as well. That's probably something that I'm going to definitely check into once we get off. All important things. At UBS, we actually adopted the multi-factor authentication or dual-factor authentication security measure as well into all of our digital products a few years back. It's increasingly becoming more common across the board. So, Chris, can you shed some lights on those benefits again? I guess you just delved into it pretty deeply. Right. I guess, could you answer maybe when we know we already have dual factor authentication? You mentioned SMS and text messages. Is there anything else that, you know, other sites that already might have that set up, other ways to know we have that 80% or so secure?
Yeah. So, I mean, just about all sites. I mean, if you think about it, I'll name it, you know, obviously Gmail. If you go into privacy and security, you can turn on the SMS authentication. You can also turn on the Authenticator app through Google Authenticator and get a code texted into you. You also can have an emergency codes that you can rotate as well. So there's a lot of stuff there. You can also do the same thing. Let's just say, for example, on your LinkedIn account. Your LinkedIn account actually has dual factor authentication. Once again, you can choose an SMS code or you can choose an authenticator. All free, all part of the app. But if you're logging in from a new device and you're not challenged for it, it means that it is off. It's not on by default. Really, we think that they should be on by default, and a lot of financial institutions are changing and moving in that direction. But even such things as like Amazon, that's dual factor authentication, probably not turned on by most, but look, at the end of the day, every single book you read, every movie you watched, every single product you bought, and all of those Alexa voice recordings are all there. So it's important to turn things on there as well. But you'll know if it's on. And if you don't, you can always go to the website, look up dual factor or multi-factor authentication or click on the security link in the portal. And that way what this really does is it fights the good fight against just passwords, username and passwords, which could be compromised, might've been in a data breach, or let's face it, people are tired. They use the same password or similar password at these websites. You want to go ahead and fight against password reuse. And the biggest way you can do that is dual factor. Once again, you do dual factor and you're somewhere between 80 to 99% secure in regard to those websites. And it's just the basic building blocks right now. It's not even advanced cybersecurity protection. It's the baseline.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's touching on the passwords and kind of digging a little bit more into there. Password security. This is a universal challenge. I talked about how there's concerns that linger in the back of my head about my own cybersecurity, and we're all guilty of you reusing passwords from time to time. And the frightening part is you. I know you have encountered a significant number of these passwords lurking on the dark web. So what's your advice for stepping up the password game itself? How can we make sure that they're strong and secure?
So once again, so just focus on passwords. You're going to focus on four key sites: email, financial, social media, and healthcare. Just those. Once again, Nike.com, UnderArmour.com. Yeah, yes, you know, there might be some important stuff there, but that's not really where the big bang for the buck is for cyber criminals. Mm-hmm. So as it relates to passwords, what we want you to do is for those key sites, absolutely have strong and unique passwords for those sites. The best way to think about this and best thing to do here is, you know, looking at the kind of total spectrum here. We don't want you to write those on sticky notes. We don't want you to write those in a little black book. If you're on an Apple product, you can put it into Keychain. Some browsers allow you to put passwords in there in terms of the password safe that's attached to the browser. Those are, you know, a little bit less secure because it's tied to vulnerabilities in the browser. And then there's full-blown encrypted password vaults. They've gotten much, much easier to use these days. Things like Dashlane, LastPass, 1Password. And using an encrypted password vault really is the penultimate. If you use it and it's cloud-based, you can log into the website on your phone, on your tablet, and your computer. You can actually invite your husband, wife, spouse, et cetera, to your instance so that you can share those passwords on the sites and still have them be long and strong. That is what is going to enable better security on those sites. Of course, dual factor is a must, but this will also enable better cybersecurity. I mean, just, you know, it's like when Black Cloak actually onboards people, over 7 of our, you know, over 70%, 7 out of 10 clients, they have the passwords that are on the deep web, dark web, and are reusing passwords across multiple sites. And it just is one of those human element things. So making sure that you understand that breaches will happen, that your username, usually your email address, and your password will get out there. And that if it's the same one everywhere, if it's super weak, cyber criminals are going to see that. And they're going to take advantage of that because it's the path of least resistance. So really important to try to use an encrypted password manager, or at least change it up. And maybe you don't want to put all 300 passwords in. Fine. Like I said, 12 keys, those 12 key sites across the four medium, email, financial, healthcare, and social media, get those passwords into an encrypted password vault. That's it. Just start there. That's good enough.
Yeah, that's good. So is that, like you mentioned Apple, like the key passwords where you can keep an Apple, is that an example of an encrypted password manager? Is that safe as well?
So Apple technology is going to be safer than just putting it into a browser. But once again, you're tying your password to a function that's part of the computer operating system that you have. The safest thing to do, and if you're doing it, I would say stay with it, especially in terms of Apple Keychain. Stay with it, use that because you can use it across multiple devices and all the rest. What we don't want you doing is using the same password, and what we don't want you doing is writing them in a little black book. So if you're doing that, stay with it. But what's really great is having an entirely separate app that is totally distinct from the browser and the operating system, so you're further insulating yourself. But once again, this is kind of like it's kind of like your doctor telling you, hey, I want you to run five miles 5 days a week. You might not be able to do that. You might be able to do, you know, 3 miles three times a week. Doing 3 miles three times a week is better than nothing. What we don't want you to do is to sit still. And sitting still is the little black book and the same passwords for every website.
That's good. Thank you for that. That's very helpful. And when it comes to updating passwords, does updating passwords regularly help mitigate the risk of breach or cybersecurity threats to any degree?
No, not at all. This is a vestige of the past. This is really, in terms of, you know, I'm a two-time chief information security officer for two different financial technology firms. This is a vestige of the past. This is an old standby back from 2010, 2012. You know, changing the passwords within a corporate environment every 90 days means that people are going to write them down. They're going to use similar themes, similar threads, and cyber criminals will see that when their breach happens, and they will use that to their advantage.
Yeah.
The only time you really need to go ahead and cycle your passwords is one, if you're using a password on, let's just say, you're using a password for your Gmail account that you know was compromised at your MGM account with the breach. Well, okay, you're going to need to change your email password because now the cyber criminals know that you're using the same password, that you might use that same password elsewhere. So you're going to need to change it and cycle it. The other way is if somebody notices you that, hey, they have explicitly had a data breach at that site, you will need to change your password for that site. That's it. Other than that, choose a long and strong password. Make sure it's not similar, especially across those 12 different sites that we talked about. And that is what will protect you.
Awesome. Perfect. And thank you. Right,
you have dual factor on it. So it's really, that's the most important part. Even if you change your, password once and you're all good and you have dual factor on it, it really, unless that, dual factor authentication technology has been compromised, SMS is not as strong as an authenticator, you'll be good, even if the password's a little weaker.
Good. Good. That's very helpful. Thank you for clarifying, Chris. So moving on to our next topic, home security. Keeping our home safe in this digital age is crucial for everyone listening. We're learning that a significant number of us are leaving our home networks wide open to the internet, which puts us at risk. Chris, I've got to admit, it's making me think about my own setup at home. I've heard a lot about VPNs and protecting VPNs. Could you shed some light on the implications of having our home networks exposed and what steps can our listeners take to safeguard their digital domains?
Yeah. So when you think about, I mean, there's like a pre-COVID and post-COVID element to this, but when you think about the home, it's a living, breathing entity. All of us essentially have a smart home. It doesn't matter how wealthy you are. You just have a lot more exposures because of a lot more smart home gear, but all of us have some type of smart device inside our home. Usually that's going to be an internet connected TV at the very least, but then you might actually have, right, your thermostats, your cameras, your Alexas, your doorbells, your garage door opener, your pool, your lawns, all the rest of the lighting, all the rest of these things are also interconnected. And then you have, right, a lot of appliances now, the washer, the dryer, the stovetop, the fridge, et cetera. All of those are smart home items and IoT devices, Internet of Thing devices. Now, what's really specific and unique to your clients, our clients, for the high net worth and ultra high net worth space is this. They all have separate systems that are called smart home systems. They're really home automation systems. They might fall under the names of Crestron or Lutron, Savant, or Control 4 systems. You might have professional cameras that have been installed, Hikvision cameras and DVRs there. Those systems are installed by AV installers, and oftentimes they are not properly secured. Default passwords, wide open, not encrypted, or misconfigured. Maybe there is a firewall, and maybe those equipment, that equipment has been installed on the wrong side of the firewall. These are all issues that you, the individual, wouldn't know about. What actually happens, and it's quite interesting, you know, at our company, our audience is all ultra high net worth individuals. 20%, right? 20%, 2 out of 10 of our homes were able to go ahead and break into digitally. It's called the penetration test. We're able to get in digitally into the home environment. Doesn't matter whether you have antivirus software. Doesn't matter if you have VPN. Doesn't, none of those things actually matter. The home configuration has been set up incorrectly. Think about it like this. Let's talk not about the digital world. You have an incredible home, and you have really, really thick steel doors and triple plated bulletproof windows and all the rest. But if you haven't actually used the locks, you just open the window or turn the door and walk in. And that's what we're talking about here. The right technology, the right gear, you know, not properly installed, not properly secured. And as a result, you can just walk in, quote unquote, digitally to the home. So what do you need to do here? A few different things. Like, let's just give some general advice. Number one, for all of those items that you're installing in your home that are the normal smart home items, the Rest, the Alexa, all the rest of those types of items, TV, make sure when you install it that you go ahead and try to update it. All of those have updates. You can put them on auto updates. Some of them just automatically update and all the rest, but make sure you're having auto updates on there because there will be vulnerabilities. There will be things that need to be patched. And you need to do that so that cyber criminals cannot take advantage of that technology and get further into your home. That's number one. Number two, you need to make sure, especially as it relates to the ultra net worth audience, that your AV provider is updating and patching the professional equipment that they implement. Restaurant, Savant, Control 4, Lutron Systems, all top-notch systems. You just got to update them and install them correctly. You need to check with them. Have they done it every single year? Have they done it every 6 months? Patches come out, quite honestly, about every month. So they should be taking care of that. Are you asking them what they're doing there? Because you're really relying upon them for that external line of defense. And then third, make sure that you test things, just like you would do on a door lock. Go outside, lock the door, jiggle the doorknob. Makes sense. Try to open up the window. Makes sense. Does the lock work? Not work. It's a little bit harder on the digital side of things because all you can do is get a penetration test done. You can have somebody use your public IP. IP stands for Internet Protocol Address. Public IP address. It's like the telephone number to your cable modem. Like the telephone number to your home, telephone number to your cable modem. It's a public number. It can be seen on the internet. There's nothing bad about that. But if you know who it is and you know you want to target them, or you just scan and you can try to break in through it and you can get through, that's really what a penetration test is designed for. For someone that's a good person, one of the good guys to try to do it. If they can get through, find out what's wrong, tell the AV company to go ahead and fix it and then retest it. That's really, unfortunately, it's like the back end of it is a little more sophisticated, but we all can take good steps here by making sure we're purchasing the right equipment on the inside of our home, making sure it's set to automatically update and patch, making sure we do the right settings on it from a privacy perspective, and making sure that if equipment is owned by, operated by, installed by others, that we're asking them the questions that we need answers to, that we want in terms of they're updating it, they're setting up securely, and finally having somebody come by and do a penetration test.
That's great. That's great. So could you give me an example of how, as me, I'm trying to think of who could do the penetration test, right? What's a way that I could carry that out?
So it's really a skill. It's really a skill where you can scan externally from your home to your home IP and try to penetrate it. It's really, quite honestly, it's going to be a more advanced tool in terms of actually knowing and using security testing applications and equipment to go ahead and do that. There's some that use hard equipment, some that just use software to try to break in, quote unquote, to the home. But really, you're kind of, quite honestly, hiring a white hat hacker to try to break in,
okay,
to penetrate the home. There's some things that people can try to do on their own, but it requires knowledge of computers, IT, and systems, because of course you want to test the right home, not your neighbor's house.
Yeah, no, I know. I tend to be a do-it-yourselfer, and some of these I also recognize. I'm in a service business in the service industry, as you are. There's some things we can't do ourselves, and we need to let go of it and just figure out how to hire somebody to.
This is one of those that's probably more so a hire somebody.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. That's good. That's great advice. Thank you, Chris. And So far we've talked about the importance of securing your accounts with multi-factor authentication, using strong passwords, and now we've talked about the importance of protecting the home environment. What could you tell our listeners about protecting their personal owned devices like phones, tablets, and computers?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, I want to keep this pretty simple. Is this a lot of people that are high net worth, ultra high net worth that are in our clientele? They have what they need on the inside four walls of their company. They have what they need. They have an IT person, a cybersecurity person. They've got what they need there. But look, cybersecurity or cyber criminals know that they're not going to go attack you where the castle walls are high. They're going to go attack in the personal life. And for many people, they will attack the spouses or significant others of the individual because they might not be exposed to the same rigorous training. You're in the financial services industry. You know all the things you have to do each year, right, around anti-money laundering and fraud and phishing and cyber. You know, it's not what the usual normal person sees. And so you want to make sure all of your devices are protected, cell phone, tablet, and computer. At the very least, consumer antivirus software is what you'll want to use. But it's a little like the normal gate that you can buy at the Home Depot might be good enough for many. But, you know, for someone that is high profile or ultra high net worth, they're probably going to need the professional Doug wrought iron you know, fence line with the camera on it and you know, that's monitored and stuff like that. And that's more an area of technology. It's called EDR, Endpoint Detection and Response. It's what large companies and banks, intelligence agencies, use to protect their own employees, but it's a corporate solution. But that's really on the outside what is the best. I will say this. There are folks that have something, folks that have nothing. You want to be in the something category. Consumer antivirus, while not sufficient to protect the ultra net worth individuals, is much better than nothing. And so that is going to actually help drive the protection for those devices, so that they are protected from malware, from phishing schemes, from ransomware. The key thing here is that no matter what you do, it's once again, one of those things where don't stand still, move towards a solution or figure it out. Having a team back you and be behind you. And in terms of, you know, protecting you from a security operations center perspective is obviously something we would recommend, but you don't want to do nothing. If you do nothing, unlike a physical asset, your car, let's just say it's in the front driveway and it gets stolen. Well, you call the police, you file a report, you call the insurance company, you get the replacement money, you get a new car. With your digital life, the most concerning aspect of that, whether it be through an email account that's penetrated, whether it be through a home that's penetrated or a computer that has malware on it, the most concerning point is this, is that your digital life, your pictures, your private text, your private moments, all the rest of this, your personal documents, trust and estate documents, tax documents, all of these things can exist on your device and other devices at the same time. Once they're stolen, once you steal a digital object, it can exist in multiple points of time, right? Everyone gets this, right? You can have a picture of your vacation. Your mom and dad can have a picture of your vacation. Then your sister can have a picture of your vacation, kids, et cetera. Those can exist in multiple places. And so you have to protect against the breach happening. Afterwards, once the information is stolen, you can't get it back. You can't put the genie back in the bottle, which is why it's so important. And I mean, really love the conversation today. Really so important to talk about this on the front end. Definitely on the front end.
Yeah. Yeah. No, thanks, Chris. That's all great. Yeah. And oftentimes people overlook protecting those personally owned devices. And so for some of us who are working for a company, we are also trained to spot phishing emails and scams. Can you shed some light on some of the latest scams out there and what we should be looking out for?
Yeah, I'll give you a few quick hit ones. This is what we call hardening the human. Hardening the human means you are able to spot that something is up. You are able to spot that something is awry. And as a result, you are in control of stopping it. Let's go through a few. We'll do a few quick hits there. So first off, your computer, could be mobile app, your cell phone, whatever. You get some type of pop-up on there. It looks like it says, hey, Apple security or Microsoft security, something's wrong, a virus, go call this 1-800 number. That's fake. It's called scareware. Do not call the 1-800 number. If you call the 1-800 number, there will be an amazing, amazing team behind the scenes. They will spend hours on with you. They will get onto your computer. They'll download software. They'll get on there. They will start stealing stuff. In some form or fashion, they will ask for payment. You will pay. They will capture your information and other things will happen. But essentially, you're going to be out tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars. You do not want to do that. So you got to harden the human to recognize that and be able to stop the scam. Second one, romance scams. Look, the fact of the matter is this. If you're on a dating website, if you're on a social media platform, stay on that platform. If you're meeting with somebody, don't get it taken off the platform to somewhere else that doesn't have some robust identification controls. Remember that anything that's on video is on video forever. So do not, do not engage in that type of activity with someone that you do not absolutely know. Do not, right? If people are asking you to move to a separate device or separate platform, be wary of it. If somebody says they can't travel to you and they repetitively can't travel to you, that's a warning sign. If you're in the military, that also can be, or they're in the military, that can also be a warning sign because of frequent travel. And then finally, if somebody asks for payment, travel problems, visa problems, whatever. Once again, these can all be red flags and signs. So a lot of romance scams going on now. And then finally, another scam, business email compromise. You're doing a close on real estate, a transaction, M&A. And at the last minute, it could be a few days beforehand, but at the last minute, it's a, hey, we have the bank account as, you know, Acme Bank account number 1234. And there's been a change to Beta Bank account number 5678. We need you to go ahead and remit the funds, the $10 million for the penthouse in New York to that new account. It's most likely a business email compromise. Don't react to things that are coming over email or text, and especially in this day and age. Get the video on, get a Zoom call going, get on there so that you can see the person, know it's them, communicate with them, even set up some type of a password ahead of time that's oral that you all know and you all agree on so that you're not duped into handing over your money, right? This is, banks have phenomenal, phenomenal controls. But when you push the button and you send the money to the wrong account, it's nothing that a bank can really do to stop that. So once again, those are three really, really good scams that are happening right now. The only way to defeat them is to spot the scam, harden the human, stop, slow down the scam. And once you do that, you'll then see it, talk to a friend, call your bank, call the real estate person, call whomever. But slow that time down and you'll see it yourself.
That's good. That's good. Thank you, Chris. And so as we wrap up, I want to extend a heartfelt thank you to our guest, Dr. Chris Pearson. Chris, thank you for joining us today and sharing all of these valuable insights. How can our listeners learn more about Black Cloak and the personalized solutions that you offer?
Well, I mean, a few different ways. You know, number one, obviously, going to our website, www.blackcloak.io. That's BLACKCLOAK.io, blackcloak.io. Submitting in information there. You have to be invited to the Black Cloak platform. So submitting in information there means that our team will reach out to you, assess that you're right for Black Cloak, that you're part of that population that we serve, and we can help you there. Also, you can reach out to your favorite bank and make sure that they, through their private wealth advisors and their teams there, that they know who Black Cloak is. They have a relationship with us. We're really looking at this as a part of your financial journey, right? Your financial health and well-being is really at the top of their list of concerns, and making sure you don't get scammed, you don't have ransomware, you don't suffer any of those harms, privacy harms, is another good way to make sure that your financial health is on the right track. So we really love those partnerships that we have there.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris. And at the Radius Group, we take our clients' security very seriously. And discussions like these are vital for staying ahead in the ever-evolving digital landscape. And to our listeners, remember to implement these practical tips in your own digital lives for a more secure online experience. If you found this information helpful, don't forget to like, subscribe, and stay tuned for more insights. Until next time, this is Colin Faulkner signing off.
Today's episode features financial advisors with UBS Financial Services Incorporated, a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA, SIPC, located at 3601 Rigby Road, Miamisburg, Ohio, and can be reached at radiusgroup@ubs.com. This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Incorporated offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary.